Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Gather Round. It is Wednesday, 26th of February, and where I am, it is fur cold. In fact, we have, supposedly, we have a major storm coming this weekend. It's supposed to go right through the United States and possibly end up in Alabama with some cold weather, so I guess I can't complain too much. At least in Illinois, we're used to having winters that are cold and snowy, things like that. So tonight, in just a little bit, we have Clint Croucher on, and he's going to talk about the economy and the homeless and some activist groups that are working to help the people who've been affected by this. And in our second hour, Sarit Jacobson comes in with Eye on Israel, and this is not, exclusively like anti-Israel, because we know there's a lot of good people there, so we try to talk about the Palestinians and the Israelis, and knowing that there's many Israelis who are on the side of the Palestinians. So that's in our second hour. Right now, we'll do a little bit of bits and bobs. And I'd like to start that out with mentioning U.S. Apartheid Week is right now. Started the 24th of February. It goes to the 2nd of March. And it's the same date in the U.K. However, several other countries are coming in just a little later than that. I will post that on the Aramar Tefio page after the show so you can see where you are when the I don't want to say celebration, but when the events are going on, and the events are so different in so many places, there will be a couple hundred cities around the world that observe this by having film screenings, different cultural events. There will be some rallies, lectures, multimedia displays, things like this, and more information on boycotting Israel. So it's a real good thing. You can just like duck go it and find out more about it. And as you just heard, I'm not a big Google things that much, but I do love DuckDuckGo, and that's just my own personal preference. There's something else I would just like to mention. And if you know me, you know I talk about it a lot because it bothers me greatly. The Pine Ridge Indian Reservation or Agency in South Dakota has been not only screwed over by the federal government, but by their own tribal council. So the people have not gotten the money for their heating, whether it's propane or electricity. So many people are sharing small homes, the elders with their children and grandchildren. In many cases, the elders have the grandchildren to raise. So there again, I will put a page on the Aramar Tefio radio page. And also, you could just go to it right now on Facebook to Tetuan Grandmother Society Winter Relief Fund. And it tells you how you can help out without sending money directly to any person on the reservation or any, mid-party, because you'll be given the name of a family that needs the help and the numbers of like the propane company and the electric company. So you can just give them a holler with your charge and help, because if you've ever been cold, you know how terrible it is. And many of these people live in cement block homes, which isn't the best thing for insulation. When you have no water and you have no heat and you have children, you're trying to keep halfway healthy. it's quite hard. But I wanted to mention also that this is the last show of Gather Round before Fat Tuesday. And many of you know about New Orleans especially celebrates, you know, big time. I mean, the big parades, lots of fun. And Fat Tuesday is the last day that you really cut loose before the 40 days of Lent that follow. So whether or not you really celebrate that, I think we all like to eat, and I love parades. So, you know, it's something to think about. But friends and I have talked about this whole idea of sacrifice, and I'd just like to put a little different spin on it, because sacrifice usually means that you're giving up something that you care about. So I'd like to say, why don't we use this time, because it is almost spring, regardless of what it looks like outside or feels like, and many people do spring cleaning. Now, of course, if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, this is backwards, but maybe you can get something from it anyway. But, you know, you can start cleaning up before the winter sets in. Up here in the northern part, we do spring cleaning. And, you know, we don't always think about ourselves or our relationships, things like that. We think, okay, I'm going to wash the walls and wash the floor and throw out the trash. But there's so much more to it. And one of the things that I've been trying to do, and I was told, well, you should probably talk a little bit about it and make yourself accountable to somebody or other people. So I'm going to make myself accountable to you all, my listeners, because I went ahead today and started in with material objects. Now, 21 is the magic number for some people doing this. Others say 28. You know, there's all kinds of numbers. But I thought, okay, we'll go with 21. So I just made a quick grab through in my house, and I came up with 21 things that are going. And actually, these are all in fine condition. So they're in a couple bags by my door. They're going to be given away to an agency where I live. And what's in this bag? I've got two skirts and two shirts. They're all too big for me. And there's really no reason to. I'm not a seamstress. I can sew a few things, but I don't really know how to take things up and on and on and on. So, you know, it's good. Somebody can wear them as they are. I've got 8 books, 4 magazines, a car toy, and a kid's picture frame. And I'm not sure how those came to be here. A soap dish. And what? 4 magazines. So that is ready to go. That's my 21 for the day. Tomorrow I'm going to pick some. I mean, I may not go with the number tomorrow, but it's like, okay, this was good. You know, just start getting rid of things. And then also, I think it's a real good time to take stock of our relationships, because spring is a time to begin things. And, you know, it's just a few weeks now till officially is spring. So maybe while we're still coming out of the dark of the year, it would be a good time to do some inner examinations and see what relationships are working for us and what ones aren't. Because it's so easy to just fall into that trap. Well, so-and-so and I have been friends forever and, you know, we're still friends and, oh, yeah, well, you know, we don't have that much in common anymore, blah, blah, but we still get together every week. Well, you know, think about the time spent. I'm not saying drop your friend. Maybe you could see them not as often if you don't want to totally drop them, because you do have some memories. Maybe you grew up together or you worked a horrible job together. But as far as spending, you know, 2 or 3 hours a week, could you do something that might be more beneficial for yourself or your family than spending this time with somebody that you really don't have much in common with anymore? You know, just start thinking about relationships with friends. And that holds for relatives too, unfortunately. Some of us have relatives that it's really great to see them once a year, but, you know, we don't have to see them every week because it's still the same old thing. So we need to think about this. And many of us are stuck in romantic, or what used to be maybe a romantic relationship, and it isn't anymore. maybe it's time to really rethink, because we all carry baggage with us, and when we're trying to spring clean, house clean, whatever, it's good if we can move along a little lighter as far as the baggage goes. So we might want to, I hate to say it, but we really sometimes just need to get rid of people. And that would be a so-called romantic relationship that is dragging us down. And it's like, okay, we've gotten everything we can from it. We've given everything we can to it. So hopefully the other person has grown, and we have too. We don't always grow in the same direction or at the same speed. So it's time to let them go. Wish them well. You know, it doesn't have to be bitterness. At least, you know, set the example. Don't you be bitter. They may be, but if they are, that's on them. Because you can't get where you need to be as a growing, thriving person if you're being pulled down. And sometimes I think we put ourselves in this position because we're afraid actually of the power we actually do have as a human being. So there's some fear involved too. And then many people think, well, if I let so-and-so go or leave him, maybe I'll never find another. And at that point, it's time to think, well, what do you have? You have somebody that you really aren't growing with. You don't really want to be with them. You're with them out of fear. And that's a very sad thing. So these are just a few of the things maybe to think about as we start out decluttering our lives. And if you have any ideas, just send them off, email aramartefeo@yahoo.com. In the subject, just put declutter or detox, anything like that that you'd like to. And right now, because we mentioned Fat Tuesday and Mardi Gras, I love Zydeco music. So here's a song. It has to do with food. Also, it's just sort of funny. Something in My Gumbo by the Porch Dogs, Cajun Zydeco Band.
Putting something in my gumbo, baby. I've been feeling kind of strange. I think you've been putting something funny in my gumbo. I've been going through some kind of change. What on earth are you doing to me, baby? Getting where I can't tell night from day.
Okay, that was in honor of Fat Tuesday coming up. Mardi Gras, my Zydeco and jazz music. Love it. And now we have from the beautiful country of Ohio, country, right, state of Ohio, Cincinnati on the river, Clint Croucher. Hi, Clint.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm cold. But
it's definitely been a long winter. Definitely been a long winter.
It has. And now this winter, I mean, this weekend we're supposed to get more. And I heard that Alabama's supposed to, I mean, it's supposed to really go through. Well, you know, you just layer up and keep thinking about spring. I keep looking at my sarongs. That's what I wear in the good weather. So I've got a couple of them hanging where I can see them. Because, you know, I'm trying to work on my mind and just keep saying, okay, it's coming, it's coming. So, you know, we'll go with that.
Well, for us activists, you know, we appreciate warm weather.
Exactly. It makes things so much better. And we're not talking 110 degrees, but we're talking, you know, 70s, 80s. It's good.
They're comfortable enough to get people out.
Yeah. Well, right now I'd be thrilled with 60s, so whatever. Yeah, we wanted to start out talking a bit about the economy and your background. I mean, what got you interested in the economy? Now, because of your beautiful accent, I'm assuming that you're from the South originally, too.
Oh, well, I'm from the Cincinnati area,
right.
Although I get accused a lot of being from further south than there.
Yeah.
I was born here actually in Hamilton, Ohio, and have been in this area most of my life. I've done some traveling and lived in other places in Gary, Indiana, and South Bend, Indiana, and Fort Wayne, Indiana, and areas like that. But pretty much at home always here in Ohio. I really do love it here. It's a pretty good state. There's some good people. The activism, the level of activism is great here. I've discovered recently, it's a real great state. I just love being here in this state, beautiful state.
Yeah.
First off, I just want to say a big, humongous thanks to you for giving me such a tremendous opportunity to come on your show and widen my fan base and try to reach more people. It's a real effective means, and I appreciate you for letting me get my feet wet here.
My pleasure, definitely. You were talking about how it is a beautiful state. I spent, time, not a great deal of time all at once, but several times I've spent a few days and cried when I had to leave. So, I mean, that tells you something because, you know, I love Ohio. And like you said, the people, fascinating. But so you're from right there, Hamilton, on the river. How did you get interested in the economy? Do you think it was the way you were raised, or what clicked in your head to make you study
it
more?
Well, it was the turning point was that I myself have been homeless on several instances, you know, and it got to the point to where I became interested in it, and basically through that scenario. You know, I was in the shoes of these guys and women, and I've seen the struggles of survival that they went through because I was going through them at the same time. You know, and my history and my upbringing is very urban. You know, I've always lived in kind of the slum areas, you know, in this community. And it's not that I mind it, you know, because I love this community, and there's a lot of really good people in this community that aren't of what you would say a social standard, you know.
Right.
So basically I got interested in the economy basically stemming from that because I see certain things, you know, such as like the income gap that is historical, you know, at historical levels, you know, and it just seems like it's a monopoly at this point. And we're trained, you know, and we're conditioned to immediately just assume that it's their fault. And that
okay, but you learned firsthand then, about the inequalities that so many people don't know because they've never run into the situation, they've never been there firsthand, and they really don't get it. I know people that will just turn away if they're in the city, like you were talking about, the urban areas, and you see someone panhandling or something, they just turn away. They don't know what to do or what to say, and so they totally ignore. And I don't know. I don't know if you ran into
totally
that yourself, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I'm sorry you were cutting out there. You know, I had a troubled youth. You know, I wound up homeless on several occasions, and you know, it's just sharing those experiences with those that were struggling to survive with me. I learned a lot, and
yeah.
I've always been kind of on the anti-government side. You know, that was before I was awakened. I was always, you know, just kind of a rebel, and I didn't like authority, and I didn't like being told what to do, and it caused me to have a lot of problems in the modern day schooling system and the education system. You know, I had problems with my teachers just based on the fact of I felt like they were trying to rule me, to you know, that they were an authority figure over me, and I've always been kind of anti-authority, so that's always caused me a little bit of problems in life. You know,
sure.
And I became a product of my environment. You know, I'm ashamed to say that, you know, I did. I did kind of fall down that road to where I, in order to fit in my environment, I did things that I'm not proud of. And, you know, I was drug addicted for many years, and I was an alcoholic for many years, you know, and I did. I became a product of that environment. And a lot of people don't realize that it's kind of conditioned to be that way, because if you're not from this community, then you really don't know much about it, you know. And it's that way on a national level. And people really aren't aware of some of the conditions that people live in this country. And they're very close, you know, and very rapidly becoming almost third world conditions, you know.
Yes. Well, that's it. When... You know, people, it's very easy to stand over here and look down on people who do have drug addiction problems or alcoholism or something, and without knowing anything about the background or, like you say, being the product of the environment. And, you know, I've done quite a bit of reading and studying about the projects, what we call them in Chicago, and you know how people... I mean, when you grow up like that, it's very hard to break away. In so many people's cases, it's practically impossible. And
yeah, indeed.
So it's you know, we sure don't, those of us who either have gone through it or who never had that, whatever, we don't have the right to look down on people going through this kind of thing. We have the responsibility to change the government and eliminate this kind of, like, the causes, whatever. But we don't have the right to look down on people. And that, I guess that's one of the reasons, probably because of your background, that you were drawn to the activism for the homeless and the organizations that you work with. How did that
exactly
come about? How long ago did you get involved with that?
Actually, it all started here on Facebook. I was an advocate for... political debate group, and I was active in political debate groups, and I quickly became known as the wacko conspiracy theorist. It was a real conservative based group. It was a very large group, and I caused a lot of controversy. I ended up getting banned from the group, actually. and it started there, and then eventually I found rolling through my news feed one day, the friend bomb, and that's part of Facebook, and it's just mass friending. A lot of people have heard about it on Facebook, for like-minded people who are awakened to the reality of the world, you know. And so through the friend bomb, I discovered a group called Awakened Cincinnatians, which is a local group here that a friend of mine, Rick Brewster, started here in Cincinnati, and it's a compilation of several different movements and groups, and you know, we got some Occupy members and some Anonymous members and members of Green Party, members of the Free Energy Party, you know, just different members from all these different sects of political movements, whether they be, you know, for government reform or for government removal, you know, and I got involved with these guys, and it's led me down the road to meet a lot of these guys and get involved in some of the operations that were based on anonymous operations, like the anonymous Operation Safe Winter, you know, and that's what encouraged some friends of mine who are active members in this group also to come up with a nonprofit organization known as Helpers for Humanity. And it's a completely nonprofit. It's not connected to politics in any way or religion in any way. They go out and they set up shop in front of homeless shelters, and they give out warm food, clothing, blankets. There's many different projects. There was a couple of guys that started a page called Meet Glenn, where they were taking a homeless guy that they talked to who showed that he wanted to learn something, and they were taking him to the local library once or twice a week and was teaching him a computer skill, was teaching him, computer skills and programming and stuff. You know,
yeah.
So just interesting things like that, and Helpers for Humanity. And, of course, I got the wheels rolling now. It's just a baby project at this point, but I'm hoping to have it rolling and ready to go by next winter for sure. Which will be kind of an offset or a branch off of the Cincinnati nonprofit, and that will be I'm still kind of bouncing around on a name. I haven't checked out entirely. I got to watch out for copyright issues and things. But we're hoping that it's going to be Because We Care Butler County, and that's going to be the Butler County edition of Helpers of Humanity. And we're hoping to do the same thing here, just set up in front of homeless shelters, set up a table, take donations from anybody that's willing to give, and just help these guys survive the winter, because it's absurd that we have any people in this country that's freezing to death or starving to death, you know, because they're unable to provide for themselves for whatever reason. I just find it appalling.
Right. Before you came on, I was making a plea for the Pine Ridge Reservation people, because it's absolutely horrible trying to live with no heat in South Dakota in a concrete block building and raise kids and keep them reasonably healthy. It's impossible. I never thought growing up that I would ever hear about people in this country not having any kind of shelter, not having food. And now... Yeah, well, now people
and everybody turns to the government for the solution. The solution lies in the people's hands.
Well, now, when the Native Americans, it is a bit different. The government has their money allotted to them, and the federal government does give the tribal council most of that money. The tribal council at Pine Ridge is just as fraudulent as the federal government, and so the people aren't getting what they're supposed to get. So, you know, there's different circumstances, and there's sometimes, I mean, living on the res is pretty much like living in the urban deserts in the ghettos in the city, and I know what that's like. I've not lived there, but I've been there in Chicago. I know what that's like, and that's what the res is like. Now, because the people have had to, for financial reasons, sell the land that they actually had, and for whatever reason, years ago, it was decided there that they could sell to people who were non-Indian, and so they have, so they can't even do anything on the land that they used to own that was part of the reservation. It's a very messed up situation, so a lot of people really need help from outside, and they need help from outside to straighten out the government.
Right.
So, you know, that's a horrid thing. But where you are, now, I don't know how big Hamilton is. I know it's part of the greater Cincinnati area. How large is that whole urban area, greater Cincinnati?
The entire area of greater Cincinnati is actually, it comes over into a tri-county area, and of course we're connected to Covington just across the bridge, and quite a bit of a greater Covington area. So, and you know, in all actuality, you know, and to drive from here to downtown Cincinnati, I can make it in about 20, 25 minutes, and that's highway time with good traffic. It can be a lot worse than that if traffic is picked up. So it's,
sure,
it's quite,
sure,
a large, it's quite a large area.
So how many people, how many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are we talking?
Oh, in the greater Cincinnati area, I would guesstimate at least a couple hundred thousand, at least.
Okay. About what kind of percentage would you think I won't say necessarily homeless, but needing help?
Well, in this area, there is quite a few. There's quite a lot because, and I couldn't exactly give, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I couldn't exactly give statistics, but I know they are available. But also in a sense that, I have been working with, and just in my area here, which is just a city outside, in the greater belt of Cincinnati, and just in this area, I live on East Avenue here in Cincinnati, or in Hamilton, and it's pretty bad. I would say that we have at least 300 to 500 homeless people that are chronically homeless. I mean, known to be homeless. There's a lot of shelter activity around here, and a lot of homeless prostitutes and such like that in this neighborhood. And in Cincinnati, it's on an even greater scale. I mean, you can,
sure,
just about every exit, that you get off of the highway, there's people standing holding signs begging for food or a little bit of spare change, and it's really depressing. It's really sad to see that. I try to help as many as I can, but there's only so much that I can do as far as roadside service.
Yeah. No, there is. I mean, you do what you can, and then, as soon as you have nothing left, then you find the family that's got three kids and they're living out of a car, and it's like, oh,
right,
my God, how have we gotten into this mess?
Why isn't there some type of private organization that ensures that if a person comes to the point to where they are in that situation and they are going to be homeless, if they're not going to have shelter, there should never be an instance where people are turned away from shelters or forced to live under bridges or in tent cities, which is becoming an epidemic here in the United States, and it's just ignored. It's ignored. It's been trained into our minds to just think, well, it's their fault and I'm not responsible for them,
Right.
Even though you've got enough money, and some of these guys have got enough money to feed 10,000 people for 10 years, and
right,
it would hardly hurt their bank account,
Yeah,
it would hardly touch their pocket.
Yeah, they wouldn't notice
so that's
it.
No.
Well, I was going to say, and I both grew up in Christian churches, and there, people are taught to take care of their brother, right? And so what happened to this nation that is, supposedly Christian, and then you can look at all the right-wing conservatives that are supposedly Christian, and yet they're the ones who are coming down against helping the homeless. You have to, some places you can't feed them or you'll be arrested. Other places you can't give blankets out or you'll be arrested. What happened, Clint?
I'm not sure where we lost our way. I'm a firm believer that we lost our way right around the assassination of John F. Kennedy, of course, but that's a completely different subject. But I believe that's the point in history where they made their stand and they made it known that the politicians were going to play ball or else. They were going to go along with their policy making and their influence and, accept their bribes or however it is that it works up there. And I think a lot of people go into politics with the right intentions, and then they get, they get into the big club with the big boys, and they get, they get life handed to them on a platter from that point on. It's hard to turn down, I imagine.
Right. That's what I've always said, that I think that people with good hearts and good intentions get involved in politics because, not all of them, but, many, because they do think that they can actually make a difference. But,
right,
by the time, it seems like the higher they go in politics, I mean, even on local levels, there's fraud and bribery, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems like the higher you get, the higher the bribery. And by the time they get up there, I mean, they already know they're going to take it. They're going to take whatever. And, you know, then if they're ever voted out or they leave, like, the Senate or the House, they hire on to some company as a lobbyist. So and they already knew they were going to go there, and they'll make more as a lobbyist than they were before. You know, it's we have to change things. But so
money
and
power corrupts the mind.
Well, you're saying that around the time of the Kennedy's assassination, you think was the turning point for that.
I do. I think that no president has taken an adequate stand against the corporate influence and the big bank influence, you know. And you know, I get accused of being a conspiracy theorist all the time. But, you know, I spend 90% of my time debunking a lot of conspiracy theories because I actually do take the time to research them properly, you know. But that doesn't mean that there's not credible information to prove a new world order theory. Because,
see,
I mean, it's not like you or I slogan the catchphrase, new world order. That's something that they've been using as a catchphrase for
right.
decades, you know. So.
Right. And you know that old phrase about just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get me.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I view you. Yeah, I consider myself a conspiracy realist, and I've had enough people prove enough things to me that I know that a lot of what, you know, is considered some conspiracy, maybe it's conspiracy, maybe it's not, but it's the truth, and what we were told was lies. So,
right.
You know, people aren't taught anymore how to reason or be discerning, because that has to do with teaching people to think, and we have dummied down people in this country so much. Most of them, to have a complete new thought is beyond them. They
yes.
think what they see on TV. They think what they hear on the radio when they're driving to work. They think what the boss tells them, you know, which is very, very narrow borders or boundaries, and that's where they do all
yes.
their so-called thinking.
Yep.
Schools aren't teaching
well,
young people.
They want good. They want to turn out good citizens. You know, and that's and that's a famous quote. That's a famous quote from the founders of the education system in America. You know, and they modeled the system, you know, closely to the Nazi Germany education system. You know, and it is. They want to turn out
drones.
Good citizens. They want
drones.
Citizens that just watch TV, consume, don't
yes.
worry about the rest of the world and what's going on with the rest of the world. Just worry about what's inside your bubble.
You have to go in depth,
and,
though,
you know,
so that you'll work
believe
at
what we tell you is true. And, you know, and it really cracks me up, you know, not to go off topic again, but it really cracks me up when Obama stands up there and says, you know, he doesn't say these exact words, but I like to ad-lib a little bit, you know. And he says, oh, it's okay, it's cool, you know, I had my people look into it, you know,
yeah.
and there's no scandal here, folks, no scandal here, move along. You know, and we're
yeah,
supposed to take their word for it now that we know everything that we know, you know. And sure, 30 years ago, we had to actually pick up a book and read it, you know. And they had more control over how much knowledge could be obtainable for the average person. But now with the information age, I mean, I've pretty much, you know, I was a high school dropout, and then I later got my GED. But other than that, I'm completely self-educated from just getting on the Internet and doing the research and doing the studies and learning the things that I'm interested in learning, you know, by myself. And, of course, I've had help along the way from all of the great Facebook friends that I've acquired over the last year and a half. You know, that have really taught me, and through debate groups. I learned so much about politics in the debate groups, just basically trolling. You know, I would go in and I would say something off the wall that would get their attention and get them arguing with me about this and that, and their arguments, I would learn, you know. So it was just quite an interesting tactic of how I've educated myself thus far.
Yeah, that's it. But so many people, they go to the schools, they learn to be the drones, they fall into that, and they think that they know it all. So they aren't concerned about keeping their education growing, they don't understand that things are evolving, because they sure aren't. And,
right.
You know, how would you think that we could reach them?
Well, I mean, being gentle as possible is one thing. I mean, we got to make sure that we're subtle and that we're gentle as possible with them by just planting seeds. And that's really the goal of everything. I kind of call it my one-man movement, because now I want to become a one-man movement, and I want to be a one-man movement that collaborates with all other movements. I want to be fair. I don't want to give more attention to one movement than the other. I want to support any movement that seeks to better this world for humanity, you know, and there's many different causes that I throw my support behind. But the point being is that, you know, I think we just got to reach them gently. You know, we got to give them hard evidence that's credible, you know, and that's something that I'm doing with my Facebook page. You know, I'm printing information and I'm putting out there information, and that's my goal, is just to get the credible information out there to plant those seeds in their mind, hoping that they'll go home and do the research and go down the same rabbit hole that I went. Because believe it or not, you know, even though we face the struggles of misinformation and smear tactics to make us look like we're domestic terrorists, you know, I think that, you know, there's a new generation of activists/journalists that are getting prepared, and we see these tactics for what they are. And we know that there's a lot of misinformation out there being out to just make us look completely like lunatics, you know. So and it does work to an extent. So I think as long as we're subtle with reaching out to people and just showing them provable, credible information that exists that proves the New World Order theory, you know, because they're definitely pushing for something. I mean, you know, they're getting prepared, they're getting ready, and why wouldn't they? I mean, you know, we think historically that's what these people do. They do contingency plans, you know, and they you'd have to be crazy to assume that they don't see the movement building and gaining momentum, you know.
Right.
And when they see that, they're like, oh, this is threatening. They're learning from the actions of other people worldwide that are standing up against tyranny and corruption. You know, and they're thinking, oh, boy, you know, what are we going to do if that happens here? So they're saying, well, let's put out a bunch of misinformation. Let's smear them to be the bad guys. And that way the neutral American, as I like to call them, you know, is going to go with us. It's going to support us when we round these guys up and throw them in internment camps. And, you know, they're going to be there. They're going to thank us for it, basically. And that's the way it's heading. If we don't step up and try to do something about this now, because they're literally, you know, right now the people are thankful for the security that they're giving us now with the Patriot Act and such things like that.
I know. Ignorant people are, because they have fallen for it. And that's it, because it's been settled. It seems like just a little bit at a time, and people just lose their rights, and then they lose more rights. And I've had friends tell me, well, I don't mind the going through the machine at the airport, you know, if it keeps us safe. Well, you know, what they need to do is get a grip. Who has ever been stopped at the airport? They haven't had any reports of that.
How many, you know, in all actuality, you look at the statistics, and it's just insane, because we're more likely to die in a car accident. Or, you know, and you see statistics all over Facebook on memes and stuff that say, you know, so many people, X amount of people died from choking on peanuts last year. And, you know, and then it shows how many people died from terrorist attacks in America last year. And it's none. You know, and it's just, you got to put things in perspective like that and look at them like, you know, the chances of us being harmed by a terrorist attack at this point, and you have to question the history before 9/11, you know, we have experienced law enforcement agencies, and we have things in place to prevent these things from happening, you know, and they're effective, and they don't necessarily impede on our freedom, you know. There's ways to go about getting justice in these situations without impeding on the freedoms that are, you know, being annihilated on every day in this country.
Well, you know, my opinion is the terrorism that I am aware of is the terrorism from the government. Like years ago, Ruby Ridge in Idaho, you might have to look that up. That was completely a governmental thing. And then shortly after, the same
thing,
that, like Janet Reno and some of the same officers, in fact, the one I think that shot the lady who was holding her baby, then they went down to Waco and terrorized and murdered all those people. Now, that's what terrorism is. It's what this government does.
Police brutality increasing. It's almost like it increases tenfold daily. I don't know what it is, but you see news stories every day of more police brutality. No prosecution seeking justice. Nine times out of ten, they're acquitted.
They're acquitted, and well, just like those officers that killed Kelly Thomas, so all that does is tell other cops, it's okay, go ahead. Now, I have some friends that are policemen, and I like them. I'm not anti-cops across the board, okay, because there are some that are good people. They got into it for the right reasons, what I consider the right reasons, and they're trying their best. But it's very hard. Those are the same people
that in a voluntarism society would still step up, for the security reasons.
Exactly.
So people think in a society void of government, which I'm an advocate for, because I believe, I really do. I have faith in humanity that people will step up and fill the roles on a voluntary basis. To still take care of the things that they feel are common laws in those areas, because anarchy doesn't equal lawlessness, and that's another word association thing that people hear anarchy, they immediately think of chaos, and I love Q&A's philosophy, basically just running down. People will say, well, what happens when I try to protect my land, and there's all kinds of scenarios that they run past you. What if this situation, and what if that situation? And I love explaining it all away, because government is, we can have a system of the people that is truly free, and in some areas, in some communities, there will be some common laws that you will be able to be prosecuted for. In other areas, there won't be. And in some areas, if you choose to set your own community to do whatever you choose, the possibilities are limitless. And people don't see that government is the terrorist here. We're being forced. Anybody that thinks we're free in this country is way behind on their knowledge, because
sadly,
mistakes.
They really are. But I wanted to ask you then, how would you advise somebody who, they're concerned. They know that we'll stick with the homelessness right now. That they know there's people in their area who are homeless. They aren't getting much food. Maybe they get to a church every other day. Some churches do like soup kitchens or something, but some of them don't do it on a daily basis. So what could somebody who's really concerned about this, but just they don't have a clue? I mean, they don't know what to do. How would you suggest they get involved, Clint?
Well, obviously it varies from person to person, because some people are more capable of doing more things. Some people's schedules don't allow for a lot of time, and some people, just can't afford to do anything. They're on a very fixed income themselves, and they're just barely scraping by, which a lot of this country is nowadays. So my advice to them is just do what you can. If you can't start your own nonprofit and start to do the same thing that, that me and the guys are. And it's being done on a countrywide basis too. There's many cities that are starting their own groups, just like Awaken Cincinnati, and they're also doing nonprofit organizations and giving away food. And everybody's just chipping in any way that they can. You know, this last year I was on a very fixed income and couldn't do much, and I my truck broke down and we ended up having to junk it in order to make rent 1 month. And, you know, things went down a downward spiral, and I was unable to attend a lot of events that were going on. I was unable to get down and make any contributions to the Helpers of Humanity. But what I did around here locally is, you know, I would have backyard barbecues and invite people, you know, over for free plates. Or in the holidays, we'll make warm meals, you know, extra plates. 10 to 15 extra plates and just hand them out to the homeless people that, because literally they're right outside my door. I mean, you know, I've got a shelter right up the street, and I've got the county jail one block from me here, and this area is just, you know, really cluttered with a lot of homeless people. So, you know, we just do what we can. You know, if you can only make contributions, make contributions when you can, you know. In my area, you know, the nonprofits, we make sure that we've got adequate, you know, notifications and ways to reach us so that if you want to make donations or if you want to come down and actually help hand out the goods or anything, the possibilities are really unlimited, you know, when you do this type of thing. And it's just, you know, do what you can do. Of course, I advise you to start your own group, do exactly what I plan to do, you know, get a nonprofit going and just set up in front of these homeless shelters and show the people that you actually care about them, you know.
I do want to interject here. I want to caution people that once you apply and pay for a not-for-profit, you are under, you're subject to a lot of government rules. I was in one of those. And there's things that you're going to disagree with, so it's something to really think about. If you think that donations that people might give that they could be tax write-offs, if you think you're really going to get big bucks and you can really, you know, it's a trade-off. Because, you know, if you don't want to have to answer to the government for every friggin' thing you do, you might want to think before you go nonprofit. And there's, like in your area, there's a lot of groups already started that you could just help out. You don't have to start your own
necessarily. Exactly. I just encourage, you know, everybody to do it everywhere. There was a thing here not too long back that a friend of mine on Facebook created. It was called Seed Bombers. And they were going around in vacant lots and cities all over the United States, and they were compacting these little seed bombs, and they were throwing them in vacant lots where they had four houses down, so that fresh fruit and vegetables would just grow up all over the city.
I've heard of that. And then, I mean, I'm very big on the community gardens that a lot of places are doing in, like, the vacant lots that you're talking about. And, in fact, some cities are very supportive of that. It's like they'd rather have that rusty old wash machine setting in the lot, you know?
Yeah,
so,
many solutions.
But we'd only have a couple minutes, and I wanted to ask you, now next Thursday, you're starting your own show here. So talk to us about it.
Well, I think the name speaks for itself. You know, it's a decide for yourself, and it's just that in fact. You know, my aim is to provide information and encourage listeners to study these subjects and reach their own conclusions. You know, don't just take my word for it. Actually get on and do the research, and I'm always open for discussions. You can reach me at my Facebook page. There's an official Facebook page for the show, you know, and you can come on there. You can comment. You can reach me in private message all the time. I'm really dedicated to this and Facebook activism and getting out in the streets and in real-world activism, you know, and I take a lot of time to do this, you know, and this is all strictly nonprofit. I do this just because I care, just because this is my passion. I want to leave a legacy behind for my children, and I want to leave a better world behind. And I want to make amends for some of the wrongs that I've done in my life, you know. So it's a personal thing, and I'm really, really passionate about it. And if you want to, you know, get involved with what I got going on with the show, you know, and I aim to do just like you're doing for me, for others. You know, if they want to come on and they want to promote their causes and such, and I say, again, I'm going to be fair. There's going to be a lot of coverage. You know, I'm going to do some coverage on all of the events that's going down. I got a plug real quick for March 1st, which is the March Against Corruption, Global March Against Corruption. That's an anonymous march and rally that they're doing in over 100 cities here in the United States, but also worldwide. So, you know, I hope a lot of people get out and see those or at least hear about it.
Could you tell us do you have some guests that you'd want to mention now, or is it too soon for you to?
It is too soon. I don't have anybody locked in for sure, and I don't want to put anybody out there that, but I have some great possibilities lined up that I haven't got locked in yet that I'm hoping to get locked in before the first show. Some documentary filmmakers and some experts in some other areas, and then I'm hoping to get some guys locally here from Awakened Cincinnatians to get on and do some talking to try to get the word out about Helpers of Humanity and other things going on, MyCon and Charity Media Cincinnati, great guy doing great works for nonprofit, in the area, maybe get some advertisement out for him. I've got so much stuff planned, it's hard to pack it into a couple minutes because I'm one of those guys where my mind just is constantly going, you know, and I'm on Facebook for probably 8-9 hours a day on average, and, you know, I'm out there, I'm making connections, I'm really putting things together. I got a lot of people getting behind me on this, and I tell you, the sky's the limit here. It's hard telling how far we could go.
Yeah, well, and that's it. That's what we have to have. We've got to have good alternative media to get the word out. And you do have, I mean, because we've talked, so I know you've got some really good guests coming up. I'm excited because you're going to cover a lot of topics. And we were talking about the Federal Reserve. I know that's one of your pet peeves or your areas of interest.
Well, people always say, you know, I get the question a lot, you know, about when confronting someone who's newly awakened or someone that isn't awakened or aware at all, where do you start? You know, I get that question all the time. Where do you start? And I think the Federal Reserve is an excellent starting point because there's a lot of really factual evidence that proves that the Federal Reserve is kind of bad for this country.
And that's such a nice way to say it too. Kind of bad for the country.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, you've run a lot of things by me that you're interested in, and I know you are from Facebook. So I'm very excited. So you will be starting next Thursday.
Right. It's March 6th.
Your show. Yeah.
I believe that will be at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Is that correct?
Yes, 7 p.m. Eastern. So it's going to be fun. It's a good time to start. You know, start out the month, the spring month you're starting out. So
yep,
all new begins.
There's going to be a lot this year to cover.
Yeah. Well, it's very exciting because the new moon is just a few days before that. So it's good to start things around then. So, hey, you're right on schedule.
That's excellent news. I tell you, it feels like it was meant to be, that's just as blunt as I can be about it because these opportunities are just falling out of my, falling out of the sky on my lap here, you know, and I'm just so honored to have the opportunity because it's something that I've been wanting to do for a long time now and been thinking about doing, and like I said, I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm very excited about it because, I agree. You know, that's what we thought. Okay, coincidence, no, there is no such thing. So it's meant to be, and we're going to go with it. So I'm very
definitely excited.
Me too. And thank you so much for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Talk soon. Okay.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. Well, so something happened to the music. However, hello, Sarit.
Hi there. Is the line working? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. I was just trying to play a little music in between, and it's on the board, but it just wouldn't play. So that's okay. Anyway, Sri Jacobson, I own Israel, and I was explaining at the beginning of the show that this is not just a bash only Israel kind of thing, because we have friends and you have family still in Israel. So we're, it's a Zionist kind of thing more than anything else. And that's okay. But so much to talk about today. So many things
yes.
have been going on.
A lot has been going on. I'm getting a report from an Israeli lefty activist about what is going on. You know, it's very hard to report what is going on in Palestine because the only one who enjoy having a media is the Zionists in Israel. And you never get to hear what happens in Palestine. And when you do get to hear, the Zionists will deny it straight away, even
right.
though it's absolutely true. Israelis have no reason to lie about what happened today. Anyway, what happened the other day, Israel bombed Syria.
Yeah.
So they pissed off Hezbollah. They vowed to respond to the airstrike. Israeli forces detain 9 Palestinians in Hebron district today. Settlers operate armed patrols across the West Bank. Israeli law distinguishing Christian, Muslim, and Arab, just to divide between the Arab population.
Mm-hmm.
They had more homes ransacked in Silwan.
Oh, that's so horrible. I mean,
more
evacuation
in Jerusalem.
Well, I've heard of people going off to work, or the kids go off to school, and when they come home, their homes have been destroyed. Yeah, there's a pile of bricks.
Or settlers move in when they go to a wedding, and it's true. I know people that went to a wedding, and when they came home, they had somebody living in their house, or
people
that had to move to their own basement because the settlers moved upstairs.
Right, because if the settlers move in, the squatters, and if they don't totally throw you out, you know they're going to take the best part of the home. So, yeah, then you've got the basement or the back room or something.
And that's
the
tidbit of what happened.
But, Sarit, I wanted to ask you about the mosque also.
Yes.
What's the latest?
Yeah, I've been hearing that settlers have been going in there every day with IDF, you know. Latest what I saw is they took an old man as a human shield and walked in with him so they won't have rocks thrown on them, the soldiers, which is a violation of international law. I have the picture.
Yeah.
So I went to the right wingers in Israel to see what they're talking in their pages and groups, and they're all talking about retrieving that land, taking the mosque, building the third temple there, and then the Messiah is on the way, they say.
These people are so delusional. No wonder these crazy Christian Zionists in this country get along with them so well. They're all fucking nuts.
That's the best way to describe it.
I mean, yeah, well, that's pretty much, oh, my God. Well, now I...
And who is the Messiah that they're talking about? I mean, they're just confused. Anyone...
The Jewish Messiah is somebody who...
I want anyone to be a Messiah. That's what scares me. I shouldn't give them ideas.
Okay. See, that's the problem. But the Jewish Messiah is somebody who's never been here. The Christian Messiah is the return of Jesus. So they aren't even talking the same thing. But what they agree on is they need to go kill people.
The Jews are divided on that too.
Yeah, well, right. The ones that have sense and the other ones. I read something today. I don't know if you saw it. The Jordanian parliament, they voted to expel the Israeli ambassador because of the mosque. And they say that, I'm sure this is true, in 1994, according to some peace treaty, Jordan was made the custodian of Muslim holy sites in Jerusalem. And that includes the mosque. And because they are trying to destroy it now, Jordan dumped the Israeli ambassador. So I say good for Jordan. At least it's a move in the right direction. You know, they're standing up for something. But they you know, this human shield thing, we a long time ago that that's against international law. But yet they get away with it.
They get what?
They get away with it.
They do.
Giant using, you know, humans as shields because the United States has done it too. The United States did it in Iraq. They've you know, I'm sure they've done it in a lot of other places because they have no morals. They don't care what international law is because they all think they're above it. But
yeah, they do, and they don't care what their own high court says.
No. It doesn't
law
matter.
Means
that's fast. What's so bizarre. I mean, they don't care about their own laws that they supposedly subscribe to. But now, we've talked before about the Holocaust and survivors and the way some of them in Israel are having to dig through the garbage for food.
Yes.
You want to talk about what they've done with this lady again, this Holocaust survivor?
Oh, yeah, a Holocaust survivor. I don't think she's Israeli. She came to visit, and she was on the Gaza flotilla.
Right. Well, I don't know. No, I think you're right. She's not Israeli. She's from Europe somewhere, though, I believe.
Yes,
she's not.
And she was very disrespected. Strip searched, cavity searched, everything.
And
just to abuse her in the airport when she left the country, she said they were very abusive to her when they searched her. And there's no need to search old ladies like that.
No. And she's leaving the country. What? They think she's taking... No, but it was only done to humiliate her. That's all. I mean, they know she's not...
Love to harass lefty.
Yeah. Well, that's it. They know she's not smuggling anything. They know she doesn't have anything. It's just pure harassment.
Yeah, harass pacifists, peace activists.
Yeah. Since they don't seem to know what the word peace means or want to know what it means, so...
No, they want to profit on their weapons, their tanks and guns and... Drones. A lot of the drone business is in Israel.
The drone business.
American drones are from Israel.
The whole drone thing is such a sad invasion. I just don't know. Yeah, what to say about that. But you told me something earlier that I hadn't realized. You want to give us a lesson in checkpoints? Because I just didn't realize. The first checkpoints I ever read about were checkpoints during the Cold War. The first checkpoints I heard about were the ones between East and West Berlin in Germany. But your time started back, at least the ones we're concerned about now, way back, as soon as Israel became a country, right? As soon as they sold the land?
Yes, even the first checkpoints that I heard of, I'm sure it's not the first. I'm sure they've always done it. This one is to keep the Arab Jews away from the Ashkenazi Jews. They put them on the border with Syria and Lebanon. There's a little corner there, I think, on the Golan Heights or next to it, or maybe it wasn't occupied then. And they didn't like where they were put, because they were isolated and they were living in dire conditions of terrible poverty, and they wanted to leave, and the army put checkpoints and didn't let them leave.
So, and that was in 1948, and even at that time, they were trying to sort of get apartheid going because they were saying the Arab Jews weren't as good as other Jews.
Absolutely. Arab Jews have no fair representation in Israel either. There's racism goes to every direction there, or elitism. The Ashkenazi Jews are basically 80% of the Knesset.
Okay.
Mostly men.
Yeah.
More and more. more than here. The patriarchy is very dominant there. And true, there is one or two Palestinian Knesset members, but they can't make a big difference because there's just one or two.
No.
And the Palestinians that live in West Bank and Gaza get no representation whatsoever in the government.
No. Of course not.
It's like they don't exist.
Right. They don't exist except as experiments for the Israeli army.
I'm sure. And when the army wants to train, they will go train in their area. So it's terror. It's scary. No. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I was them. It would terrify me.
No wonder everybody's got post-traumatic stress disorder, because when they just break in your house at night, take your kids, and you have no recourse. And sometimes you don't even know what prison they put your child in.
Oh, yeah. My girlfriend from Israel went to the prison when one of the kids was in trial for throwing rocks, and he was just 8 or 9 years old. And she said it broke her heart because the mother came to her crying because she didn't understand Hebrew. And my friend is a lefty. She came to help and write about it. And the mother she was the only one that could talk to the mother. No one gives a shit.
Yeah. Well, I read something or saw it in a documentary or something I think it was the one about the children. That's horrible, horrible, horrible. Where the mother didn't know what prison her kid was being held in. And in court, he couldn't say anything. His mother was in court, and he yelled out the name of the prison so his mom would know where he was being kept. And, I cried during the whole thing I watched. I mean, it was just horrid. And nobody should be going through that kind of thing. It's total. They're trying a different form of genocide is what it is. I don't know. I have a friend in Gaza. Well, the food is it's sparse again. It's hard, that so many tunnels have been closed, and it's hard. They can't grow as much as they used to because, the army and the squatters take down trees, and olive groves, orange groves, and then in Gaza, you can't grow anything close to the towers, so it's very hard for people to. And if you're a fisherman, you're apt to be shot at and have your boat stolen from you.
Yeah, and I hear from an Israeli soldier who refused. He told me that the water where they are fishing is so dirty, the 5 miles near the shore are full of oil. So they shouldn't even be eating the fish that they are fishing.
No, they should no. And, but see, this is one of the reasons why Israel wants this, because there's oil. So they don't want Palestine to have it.
The natural gas. Yeah.
Right.
They knew about it before the siege. They're just now pretending like they know about it.
Right. But they did know. But that's another thing that's against international law, because occupiers are not supposed to profit off the land.
And they always do.
Yeah, sure.
That's why they do it. And they use the Palestinians as slave labor.
Right. That's, people say, if you're boycotting, so you're hurting the Palestinians, and because they're, like in the West Bank, a lot of Palestinians work for the squatters and the government in the like the places that make Soda Stream and that kind of crap. And it's one of those things. We're still boycotting because it's going to hurt the companies. And, it's true that Palestinians will have to scramble even more than they are now. But the boycotting seems to be working because Israel is a bit disturbed. Oh, you know, this is Apartheid Week, U.S. Apartheid Week?
Absolutely, yes.
And yeah,
to me, it's Apartheid Week. Every week I talk about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's,
as we know.
It's one of those, after the show, I'm posting that back on the Aramarte Field page and then also on mine again. But it's during this week, that ends the 2nd of March next week, is the for the UK and the US, this is the week. And then some other countries have it coming up. So about 200 cities, I read, will be doing all kinds of demonstrations, rallies and lectures and just different cultural things and encouraging the boycotts, the whole BDS. So I think that's exciting. This is the 10th anniversary.
That's amazing. So, I wish Nashville was
next week. Yeah. And I've heard that, or I've read that some of the Israelis are not happy about this because it seems like it's finally, it's making a difference.
It really is hurting them.
Yeah.
They are in desperate situation right now because they really do not want to give up any land.
Yeah.
They want more.
Well,
I've argued with right-wingers that say they want more.
And
the Israeli group.
Well, sure. I mean, and the right-wing, well, they just totally want to genocide the Palestinians out.
They wear jumpers that say death to the Arabs. They wear hats or something that says death to the Arabs when they patrol the Arab neighborhoods.
See, now something like that's, I mean, well, the whole thing is just totally immoral. I don't have words for it but that again, is harassment, that psychological harassment.
It's common to see death to the Arabs graffiti in Israel, every wall, everywhere there's graffiti. It's like the most common thing to see.
Sure.
Or
I mean,
here.
Right, and so everything you do, You're reminded because, okay, you see the soldiers come wearing things or you walk down the street and you see that on the wall. So it's all psychological warfare.
Oh, it's a complete hell. And a lot of people get detained for the afternoon, for the evening, you know. You know how we don't like being stopped by police even when we don't do anything?
Exactly.
For them, it's probably 1,000 times worse.
Sure. Because, I mean, and in any of the cases, it's sort of like amusement for the people stopping them, you know? I mean,
totally.
They enjoy
the power. They're just kids.
Exactly. Power-hungry
people.
I
recommend anyone who doesn't know what's going on and wants to know just to go through soldiers' testimonies. All you have to do is go to Breaking the Silence or S-H-O-V-R-I-M, Shovrim. On YouTube, it's their channel. There's new testimonies just came out, horrific things. I can usually hear 4 or 5 at a time because it's really depressing.
And then you have to go. How do you spell the YouTube channel again, Sarit?
S-H-O-V-R-I-M.
I-I-M. Okay.
It's supposed to be just Breaking the Silence, but Israel put a lot of songs called Breaking the Silence, so you won't be able to find it. So you have to go to Stream to find it, or they have an internet site, too, where they have testimonies written down about settlers, about killings. I can give you an example of a testimony. My friend gave a testimony about naked dead bodies arriving in the base where he was at.
Oh.
And he said it bothered him that they were naked and some of them were women.
Oh.
And one day when he was having a cigarette, he saw them in the room where the dead people were, some Israeli soldiers having their picture taken with them.
That's just that's disgusting. That was like, what was it, a few months, a couple of years, sometimes time runs together. We saw those pictures of U.S. soldiers having their pictures taken with some dead Afghanis.
Yeah, same
and
thing,
it's like,
huh?
Yeah, it's the very same thing. And I mean, these people, they've lost all respect for humanity.
I think they've gone insane.
That is just, no, that is...
War will make anyone insane, so some people just take it the other way, I guess.
You're right, right. Because war is an insane...
And even if you're an occupier and you're occupied and can't fight back, it still makes you insane even more, I think.
Well,
right. You're wrong.
I think it makes you even more so because you can't fight back. Because, you know, a lot of times we feel, well, if I can fight back, at least I'm doing something.
Yeah.
But when you can't, you don't even have that feeling. It's just like, you know, like you're sitting there, like a sitting duck, kind of, okay, they can just come and do whatever they want to me, and I have no recourse.
Yeah, and those... abuses are not rare. They're actually the most common thing, because I've been speaking to too many people, too many soldiers, too many Palestinians to put one and one together. I check every information from every angle before I even any conclusions. And even now I'm still searching. But all the information leads to the same thing. I can just get it all from the Israeli right wing if I want to. They want to kill them. They don't want them to be... And they hate us Israeli lefties because they say we care about human rights because we're trying to bring back our grandparents from the Holocaust. That says it all, who we're dealing with.
That isn't even... It really doesn't make sense.
The main thing to say...
It's what somebody's told them and what they've latched onto without thinking, you know, thinking.
It's true. My favorite aunt has been in Auschwitz for 2 years. So knowing her for a short time did something to me, I must admit. Made me realize how evil it is to oppress people. I've seen the damage. She never recovered. She committed suicide at the age of 93.
Wow.
Never recover this.
So, you know from her what fascism is, what fanaticism is.
I hardly knew her. I met her very briefly, but she's the most wonderful person. Yeah.
Well, yeah,
make people commit suicide.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people committed suicide in the camps, and... You know, but now that there's going to be still more, because we still have quite a few people left who were in the camps, and the people in Israel who are being treated so poorly, it's like they were treated poorly in the camps, they got to Israel and they're being treated poorly now, so. You know, their lives.
Those
who's
in power in Israel, they're no Jews are in power. If real Jews were in power, they'd care about the Holocaust survivors.
Well, no. These are the political entities. These are representatives of that. And I mean, they aren't doing anything for religious reasons because they're not religious. They may use that, like some politicians in this country. They use that because they get support from the Christians or something, you know. So they're going to, but they aren't religious. They wouldn't be doing it for sure. It's against any kind of religion.
It is.
So it's so sad that then people who are in these religions actually fall for it and think that these people are following some kind of religious. Dictates or something that they're really for them, and they're only for themselves and their own greed. I don't know. Now you were talking about a friend who is people are saying on different pages, if they see him, if they run into him, the Zionists are saying that, you know, they're telling each other to spit on him.
To spit on him and kick him. One of my best friends.
Yeah,
they're having a hate campaign against,
yeah,
you know who it is. I can say his name.
Right.
His name's, but they do those hate campaigns against any lefty that gets any recognition. They put their pictures up in all their hate pages, and they all get lots of hate mail and their picture published, and they, you know.
It's
a country where they have beaten lefties and killed a few.
Yeah. So, I
wish I knew more about lefties that have been killed, because it's hard to know. But
right.
I know for sure about a lefty that a grenade was thrown at him 30 years ago.
Mm. Yeah.
In a protest for peace, for giving back 67 occupied territories from 67, he said we shouldn't keep them, and they threw a grenade at him and killed him.
Yeah, and yeah, so, I mean, there's been a lot more of that, I think, than we'll ever know.
Rabin was killed because he wanted to give back the territories, President Rabin.
Yeah. Yeah, well...
And who was behind killing him? Bibi Netanyahu was one of the inciters to kill him.
Well, that's no surprise, because Bibi is a complete mess. It's like, I don't know what went wrong with him. I don't know how he...
Everything.
Really? I mean, I don't know... You know, I don't know anything about his history. I don't know how...
He lives in a palace.
Well, yeah. I mean, power, the desire for power and control is so amazing. And there again, people who have that kind of thing, they're really not spiritual, not really, not in any kind of a good sense, or religious, because they don't follow real religion, the core of religions. So I don't know where he comes from. I just don't understand that. It's amazing to me.
There's rumors, CIA, not rumors, actually saw that he is.
Well,
they showed the papers.
Well,
WikiLeaks
put
up bad things about Israel and not working for peace.
Yeah. Just like the United States government isn't working for peace. They're trying to stir things up in Ukraine and Venezuela, every place they can. But we have to go now. Thank you so much, Sarit.
A pleasure, anytime.
Because you always have things to tell us and to make us think. And that's a good thing, because we need to think. We need to know what's going on. So I'll just say, have a wonderful weekend. Even though for me the weekend starts on Thursday, so and we'll see you back here next Wednesday.
Okay, bye-bye.
Say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.